I can call my bank and say, hey, I want to cancel this credit card. So I've been doing that. I took my solo 401k and consolidated into an IRA. I've been taking steps like this to ensure that after I'm gone, things for Elaine and for my kids will be super easy.
Jonathan Clements describes his financial plans of action after a diagnosis of terminal cancer. Next on Consuelo Mack Wealth Track.
Funding provided by Clearbridge Investments, the Fairholm Foundation, First Eagle Investments, Bill Miller, Baird, Strategus Asset Management, Research Affiliates, Royce Investment Partners, Seafarer Capital Partners, and Women Investing in Security and Education.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Wealth Track. I'm Consuelo Mack. The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry is the modern English translation of the oft-quoted line from Ode to a Mouse, a famous poem from the 18th century Scottish poet Robert Burns. The poem is about a farmer who inadvertently plows over the carefully constructed nest of a field mouse, destroying its home. Today's guest is living proof of someone who has indeed made best-laid plans for retirement that have unexpectedly gone awry by a shocking diagnosis of terminal cancer. But rather than wring his hands and lament his fate, he is taking actions to readjust his retirement plans and make his departure easier for his family, a process he wants to share with others, including us. He is Jonathan Clements, an influential, acclaimed, and much appreciated personal finance journalist who has been a favorite Wealth Track guest from our earliest days. Clements is the founder and editor of Humble Dollar, a free weekly online newsletter devoted to telling you everything you need to know about money. Launched in December of 2016, it has become an active online forum for individuals sharing their financial journeys, tips, and advice with Jonathan and each other. Where I met Clements years ago was at the Wall Street Journal, where he wrote the widely followed personal finance column, Getting Going. By the time he left the Journal in 2008, he had penned over 1,000 columns. He has also managed to write a novel and 8 personal finance books, including his personal favorite, How to Think About Money. He also edited the recently published My Money Journey, How 30 People Found Financial Freedom, and You Can Too. Clements is also the director of financial education for the wealth management firm Creative Planning, and for 6 years was the director of financial education for Citigroup's Personal Wealth Management Group. I asked Jonathan about his cancer diagnosis and why he decided to use it as a financial planning teaching opportunity.
First of all, Consuelo, it's great to be on your show again. But yes, as you mentioned, I recently got a terminal cancer diagnosis. In late May, I was having some balance issues. I went to the urgent care clinic. I ended up in the emergency room. And before long, I was in a local hospital where, as a result of some scans or brain MRI, they discovered that I had both lung cancer and lung cancer that had metastasized to other parts of my body, most particularly my brain. I have a version of lung cancer known as EGFR exon 20, for which the treatment plan is not terribly promising. In fact, people who have my variety of cancer typically live another 16 months. That's the median life expectancy. I don't know what other people do when they get a terminal diagnosis like this, but in my case, I'm setting out to make the most of the time that I have. I don't want to be consumed with anger or despair. Instead, I want to make the best of every day that I have. And one of the ways that I want to make the best of the days that I have is to get my financial affairs in great shape so that I do well not only by my wife Elaine, but also by my 2 kids. I want to make sure that I don't bequeath a mess.
When I think of anyone bequeathing a mess, you do not come to mind at all. If anything, you have been incredibly careful and, you know, you planned out your retirement and you have your financial affairs in order. But there have been some surprises, right? I think you told me, you know, what dying, it turns out, is a very busy business.
It's hard work dying, Consuelo. It's really hard work. In the month since I got this diagnosis, I've been closing credit cards. I've been consolidating financial accounts. I thought my financial affairs were in great shape, but you know, I've been so busy. Every day I'm doing something. I mean, actually, just before I sat down in this chair to record this interview with you, I was down in the basement shredding old tax returns. I want to make sure that things are in great shape. And as great as I thought they were, as simple as I thought my finances were, I would have left my family with a lot of hard work in order to get things in good shape. So if you think about things like closing financial accounts, I mean, if you close financial accounts or if your family has to do it, they'll probably have to produce a death certificate. It's going to be multiple calls and so on. But I could just pick up the phone and, you know, I can call, you know, my bank and say, hey, I want to cancel this credit card. So I've been doing that. I took my solo 401k and consolidated into an IRA. I had an inherited IRA from my father, didn't have very much money in it. I liquidated that. I've been taking steps like this to ensure that after I'm gone, you know, things for Elaine and for my kids will be super easy.
In my introduction to you, I mentioned Humble Dollar, which is this, you know, wonderful free newsletter that you put out. You have a series on Humble Dollar, and one of the titles of one of the newsletters was The Risks We Miss. So what are the risks that we miss that you have discovered with this diagnosis?
So when we manage our financial affairs, you know, we are always thinking about risk. That's why we diversify our portfolios. That's why we keep a certain amount of cash in the bank and have an emergency fund. You know, that's why we have all these different insurance policies. But, you know, when we set out to manage risk, what we're doing is trying to prepare for a whole series of events we don't know what the risk is that we're going to get hit with. And, you know, because of that, you know, we do need to have a variety of different defenses against bad times. You know, there are all kinds of possible futures. We just don't know which one we're going to get. And in many ways, the same is with your health. I mean, I've spent, you know, many years worrying about my cholesterol level. It's a little bit higher than it should be. I'm technically pre-diabetic, and that means I have a high fiber diet. You know, I've been concerned about that. You know, I exercise regularly and so on, and then wham, out of the blue, I get a cancer diagnosis. So with all the efforts that we make to manage risk, we still can't be sure that we are fending off every bad thing that's going to happen to us.
Would you have done anything differently knowing that you were going to get this diagnosis?
Definitely more French fries. Probably a little bit more red wine. You know, those don't seem to be the proximate cause of my lung cancer. A serious question, right? I've spent, you know, 40 years preparing for retirement. I'm 61. You know, I was on the cusp of, if not retiring fully, at least working less hard in the years ahead, and suddenly, you know, all this money that I've amassed, this wonderful seven-figure portfolio, it's not going to pay for my retirement. Instead, it's going to pay for the retirement of other people. Nonetheless, do I regret it? Do I regret all the years of scrimping and saving? I mean, I've talked a lot in my various articles about living frugally. But no, I don't regret it because, in a sense, you know, the thing about money is it doesn't just exist to be spent, it also exists to make us feel financially secure. And as a consequence of my frugality and my good savings habits over the years, I don't really think about money. I think about other people's money. I write about it all the time, but I don't think much about my own money because I don't need to. I don't have to worry about it. That's one of the virtues of saving regularly and building up a decent portfolio. Probably the last time I worried about money was, you know, back in my 30s.
That is so fortunate, and it is well-planned good fortune as well. People listening to this interview might not realize you and I have known each other for a long time, and I've always appreciated your wry sense of humor and your just kind of matter-of-fact assessment of these are the things you need to do. So they might be surprised that we're talking about a very serious subject that you mentioned, as a matter of fact, that you have discovered has really been taboo, which is why you wanted to have this conversation. So what have you discovered about kind of the taboo of having a terminal diagnosis?
So Consuelo, we talk about death a lot, and obviously we talk about the dead a lot, but we don't often talk about dying. Now, partly, of course, it's because, you know, I am, fortunate or not, you know, aware that I'm dying and I have the chance to speak about it. Many people, you know, suffer cognitive decline and don't really get a chance to talk about dying. Other people, you know, something happens, they have a heart attack, they have an accident, and suddenly they're gone. But I am faced, you know, with this relatively quick decline, but I'm well aware of what's going on. And so it's given me the chance to talk about dying. And I've discovered that people find it, I think, somewhat liberating. They find it interesting. And I keep asking myself, well, why is that? And I would put it this way, you know, we talk a lot about sex, but we never talk about, thank goodness, about our favorite sexual positions or anything like that, right? We don't go talk about it that personal way, thank goodness. Well, similarly, you know, people talk about dying, but they don't actually talk about themselves dying and, you know, what's going on with them. And I think that personal aspect of it is really striking to people. And to my surprise, you know, sort of late in the game, I've suddenly have this huge readership of people who are interested in what's happening to me and, you know, my departure from this world.
What are the questions that they're asking most often, Jonathan?
I think they're just curious about my experience. And I think one of the things that makes them curious is that, you know, I'm not slinking off into some dark corner and dying alone. And maybe that's what a lot of other people do. They don't talk about the fact that they're dying. Instead, you know, I've made it clear that I am looking to make the best of every day. I'm not going to be consumed with anger. I'm not going to be consumed with despair. Also, fortunately or not, the nature of my diagnosis is such there is only one treatment plan that is considered the standard of care plan. And it doesn't matter where I go in the country, I'm going to get that treatment plan. So, in a sense, it makes things very simple. I don't have to travel the country and go to every cancer center in order to get the right treatment plan. You know, one of the things that I wrote about and have written about a lot during the course of my career is about happiness research. And one of the things that, you know, from happiness research, I've sort of concluded there are three sort of areas where we should focus on. One is making sure we have a sense of financial security. Well, we've already touched on that, Consuelo, you know, being a good saver, having a certain amount of money in the bank, that will give you this, a sense of financial security. And that's a big source of happiness. Second, you know, friends and family are a huge source of happiness. I mean, this shows up in the research again and again. You know, if you want to invest in anything to make yourself happy, you should invest in time with friends and family. But the third source of happiness is being able to spend your day doing what you love. And that is also what I'm trying to do, you know, in the months ahead. And in terms of getting my financial affairs organized, not only am I looking to help my family, but also at this time when I've really lost control over my life's trajectory. I mean, I do not control what is going to happen to me. At least I can control this one small aspect of my life. I can control what's going on with my finances, and I can make sure that they are reasonably well organized, and they do end up, you know, I do end up gifting something to my kids and my wife that will be beneficial to them. One of the things I would say to you, Consuelo, is that the greatest joy comes from those small things that we do every day. You know, that first cup of coffee, exercising, sitting down on the laptop, writing and editing, you know, corresponding with the people who read and write for Humble Dollar, getting to the end of the day and having a glass of wine with Elaine. Those small things that I do every day, those are the greatest sources of pleasure. And it does go to this notion of we all need to have a sense of purpose. We all need a reason to get out of bed in the morning. It's important to spend our time doing things that we are passionate about, that we find challenging, that we feel we're good at. And that's what I'm trying to do with my days.
And Jonathan, you wrote a book several years ago called How to Think About Money. I am going to recommend it again at the end of this program. You told me it's your favorite book. You've written like eight of them, but it's your favorite one. But how should we think about money?
Well, I think that one of the things that, you know, is in the book is some of the thoughts about money and happiness, which we've already discussed here. One of the other things that I talk about there is some of the lessons from behavioral finance, as applied to investing and the importance of things like not becoming too self-confident in our estimation about the financial markets and about our investing. And, you know, I will confess to this one, Consuelo, I also talk about the importance of taking a long view. And that means not only the long view when it comes to the financial markets, but also when it comes to our life expectancy. And indeed, you know, earlier this year, before I got my diagnosis, you know, I was writing about how, you know, I could potentially live to age 90. Well, that, of course, that's not going to happen, but it will happen to a lot of people who are watching this program, and they need to invest and save as though they're going to have an extraordinarily long life, because, you know, they most likely will. They will not end up in the boat that I've ended up in.
And Jonathan, as I also mentioned in my introduction to you, this is the 20th anniversary of WealthTrack, and you have been, were one of our earliest guests and have been a regular guest as well. So in the last 20 years, looking at the financial planning landscape, looking at what's happened in the markets, what are some of the biggest changes that have occurred? And are there any changes that have occurred that would, you know, change what our traditional financial planning might have been, let's say 20 years ago, but before WealthTrack launched?
So if you go back more than 20 years, the focus on Wall Street and on most investors was on the financial markets and on investing and trying to find investments that were going to outperform the market averages. And of course, as we've learned again and again, it's a fool's errand. I mean, there aren't great money managers out there with market beating records. Most individuals end up lagging behind the market. So, you know, the wise thing to do is stop wasting time trying to beat the market. Instead, focus on other areas of your financial life where you really can add value. And that means focusing on things like managing taxes, making sure you buy the house that's the right size, making sure you buy the right insurance policies, making sure you claim Social Security at the right time. All of these are areas where people can add a lot of value to their financial lives rather than wasting time trying to pick hot stocks or market-beating mutual funds. I would also add that there are two other areas in addition to these broader financial planning issues that folks should focus on. One is this connection between money and happiness, trying to make sure you spend your dollars and use your dollars in a way that brings as much happiness to your life as possible. And the second thing that's worth thinking about is what money means to you. And this can really influence not only how you invest and how you spend, you know, and to do that, you really need to look back through your life and think hard about what were the values that you got from your parents, what were the seminal events that guide your thinking about money. And now, once you've sort of put your finger on those things, they can help you to set up your finances in a way that you have a happier financial life. Perhaps you know, give money to the charities you care about most, and so on and so on. So thinking more about finance in the broadest way, rather than focusing just on the financial markets, that's the big change that's come in recent decades. And I think it's a really important change, and it's an area where everyday investors can vastly improve their financial life.
What does money mean to you when you ask yourself that question?
Money means I have the freedom to spend my days as I wish without worrying about how I'm going to pay the bills. I mean, the fact is, you know, if I hadn't been a good saver and I was at this point in my life and I was still working and I still needed a paycheck, this cancer diagnosis would be much rougher.
What are the best things that we as your friends and your colleagues can do for you?
That's a really interesting question. One of the very odd things about this cancer diagnosis, knowing I'm dying and people finding out about it, is that, in a sense, I've been attending my own funeral for the past couple of months. I've heard people tell me, you know, what an impact I've had on their life. And, you know, I'm not patting myself on the back here. I think for people who are watching this, you don't realize how many people you have influenced. There were probably people during your career who you mentored, who you didn't even realize you were mentoring, and they may be profoundly grateful for what you did. And I think in recent months, with all the correspondence I've had from former colleagues, from friends, and so on, it's made me realize not only the influence I've had, but also the influence that all of us have on each other. And it's given me an appreciation for the world that I didn't have before.
you have a whole series of columns about this and about, you know, the financial planning aspects and what you're doing for your family on Humble Dollar. What are you working on now?
Well, one of the things that I've been very focused on in the last couple of months is, you know, giving away money. For instance, one of the things that I had done back in 2015 was I wrote a private mortgage for my daughter when she bought her home. And, you know, I was going to forgive that loan in my will. And then I realized actually it would make more sense to forgive it now. The reason being that, you know, as long as I live a year after having forgiven that loan, it won't be subject to Pennsylvania's 4.5% inheritance tax. So I went ahead and forgave that loan. So I've got a piece coming up about giving away money to not only to my daughter Hannah, but also to other family members. I've been thinking about, you know, why it is at this late stage that I don't have any regrets. And in many ways, you know, when I look back at the life I've had and the opportunities I've been given, I've been profoundly fortunate. And I think most of us, if we look back and we think about the opportunities we've had, you know, and the things we've been able to do, you know, the people who've been in our lives, if you've had children and so on, you know, would be profoundly grateful. And I think it's a great exercise to go through. You know, expressing gratitude helps happiness. And most of us, if we sat down and made a list of all the good things in our life, we might end up, by the time we finish the list, feeling somewhat happier.
So, Jonathan, you know, we have this one investment for long-term diversified portfolio at the end of every wealth track. And so what would yours be? And it can be an investment. It can be an investment in time.
Well, I'm glad you broadened the criteria for what this one investment is. So 2 days after I got my diagnosis, I sat down with my two kids and my wife, and I told them exactly what they would get from my estate. I drew up a sort of a short list, a summary of what they were going to get. And I'm really glad I did it, not only because, you know, they got a sense for what was coming their way, but also it turned out to be only the first of many conversations. So for those of us who are financial nerds, and I assume, Consuelo, that everybody who watches your show is a financial nerd. For those of us financial nerd, all this stuff comes easy. It's all, you know, it doesn't seem complicated at all. But when after I spoke to my wife and my two kids about what was coming their way, there were a whole slew of conversations that followed, because things like the difference between a traditional and a Roth IRA, or what goes through probate and what doesn't go through probate, or what will be, you know, later be subject to taxes, all of this stuff, which is second nature to me, and I'm sure second nature to a lot of viewers, this is really confusing to, you know, other people. And so I was glad I had the conversation, and then I was able to have subsequent conversations. So I would say, you know, whether you have a terminal diagnosis or not, sit down with your family and talk about the finances, because it won't be the only conversation you have.
Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us on Wealth Track, as you have been since our launch 20 years ago. And as you were so kind enough to point out that you've been in my life for over 35 years when I was just a baby, as were you. But how wonderful your writing has been, your wonderful sense of humor, your, you know, sense of purpose in trying to help us sort our financial lives, which is so important in having us achieve really happiness and peace of mind. You've just been invaluable for me and for so many other people. So, Jonathan, what a treat and a privilege to have you on Wealth Track again. Thanks for joining
us. My pleasure. I've got to spend my entire life doing what I love, and so I am the one who consider myself incredibly fortunate.
At the close of every Wealth Track, we try to give you one suggestion to help you build and protect your wealth over the long term. This week's action point is read Jonathan Clement's work. For starters, explore HumbleDollar.com, his free online personal finance website. There you will find his short, simple, and common sense approach to achieving financial freedom, as well as those of the Humble Dollar community. Second, read his book, How to Think About Money, which Jonathan says is his favorite. It provides his personal view of a coherent way to think about money based on 30-plus years of writing and researching it. As he says, growing wealthy is actually embarrassingly simple, and he provides five key steps to do so in How to Think About Money. Now, one of my favorites is Clement's most recent book project. He organized and edited My Money Journey, How 30 People Found Financial Freedom, and You Can Too. I happen to relate to personal stories, and this has 30 of them in their own words of their mistakes and victories as they achieve their own definition of financial success. Well, as you have just experienced, Jonathan Clement's delightful sense of humor, common sense financial advice, and overall wisdom have endeared him to tens of thousands of readers over the years. He intends to keep on writing for Humble Dollar and sharing his reflections and advice. I look forward to following him and invite you to do the same. Next week, in part two of our interview with investing thought leader Whitney Tilson, he will discuss how the markets have changed over the last 20 years and what it means for investors. In this week's extra feature, Jonathan Clements discusses why Charlie Ellis's classic, Winning the Loser's Game, is a must-read for investors. If you are interested, please follow us on Facebook, X, and our YouTube channel. Thank you for spending your precious time with us. Enjoy your weekend and make the week ahead a healthy, profitable, and productive one.